a session of today and of this workshop. So the first speaker is Maria Zamaka from the Albert Einstein Institute, and she's going to talk about finite size effects from giant magnons.
Okay, so thank you very much for the invitation. And I would like to say about this work, which is a joint work done in collaboration with Gleb Arutyunov from Utrecht University and Sergei Frolov, who is also here in Albert Einstein Institute. Okay, so although this is the last talk, talk in this conference, you have heard a lot about ADS-CFT and integrability in ADS-CFT, but let's just in two sentences revise the main goals which we are trying to achieve here. So the central problem which we are trying to really understand is how to quantize strings in the ADS5 cross S5 geometry. And the reason why people in string community are interested in that is because there is this famous conjecture that this string theory in this background should be dual to gauge theory. And this is really a conceptually new way of looking at both gauge theory and string theory phenomena. And it turned out that this problem is actually a very complicated problem. And basically, if you would try to solve it, all known methods seems to be failing in trying to address this problem directly. Basically, the sigma model describing strings on this geometry is very complicated. However, basically, essentially the idea that there is this duality between gauge theory and string theory led to an idea that this problem of quantizing strings in ADS5 process 5 can be actually phrased into the problem of writing some kind of quantum string beta equations for quantum strings in this geometry. And really, the idea that there is some kind of underlying quantum string structure, string chain structure hidden behind the sigma model, essentially came from gauge theory and study of the anomalous dimension of gauge theory, where various integrable spin chains appeared. And then it turned out that actually, if you look at continuum limit of this beta ansatz describing these various spin chains, they looked very similar to the continuum equations which were could be obtained from classical string theory. So since you know that you have some kind of continuum equations, integral equations describing the gauge theory, then the idea was that these integral equations, continuum equations which you observe in a string theory, maybe there is some kind of discrete structure, beta-like structure, behind this classical string sigma model. And this was basically an idea of Arutyunov, Frolov, and Staudacher to discretize these classical strings and write some kind of quantum string beta equations. However, the point is that whatever you write here, you cannot really derive it strictly from first principles, and it's very important to be able to check predictions coming from these quantum string beta equations against the explicit computation, which you can do by semi-classically quantizing strings in various limits in this geometry. In particular, what we know to do is we know how to quantize small strings describing so-called plane wave limit, or very large solitonic strings, or something hopefully is near flat space limit. So I will basically, my talk here, focus really on trying to understand how predictions from these quantum string beta equations talk to the predictions which come from, to explicit computation coming from the semi-classical quantization of strings. So for that, let me just briefly write what are the key ingredients which are hidden basically behind any kind of beta equations. So first of all, imagine you have an integrable system in infinite volume. That means that since you're infinite volume, we can define asymptotic states, and we can identify sort of elementary asymptotic particles. Let's vaguely refer to them as magnons. For them, we know exact dispersion relation. And basically, since we can separate them far away from each other because we have, as I say, well-defined asymptotics, then we can add, multi-particle system is just described by adding these energies of individual particles together. Now, the main feature of integrable system is that if you start scattering out these particles against each other, then n-body interactions actually factorize into sequence of two-body interactions. And moreover, these two-body interactions are such that particles, moments of the particles which interact do not change, but rather get exchanged in the process of scattering. So this is now very nice. So basically, that means that we solve the theory. If you have integrable system in infinite volume, we know everything about that system. If you know dispersion, if you identify what are elementary excitations, we know their dispersion relations, and basically we know the S matrix, which describes how two-body particles interact. Now, situation complicates when you go to finite volume, because there are two basically potential kind of effects which can appear. One is coming from one over volume effect, And another one is that if you're not dealing now with the interactions which are delta-type source, but they have some finite range, then the relevant parameter is also the range of interactions versus the size of the volume. Now, even if you can neglect this second parameter, second term, so if you have particles which interact via delta for delta type of interactions, you still have to worry about boundary conditions, namely your wave function for the multi-particle system is not arbitrary, has to satisfy periodicity boundary conditions. And beta equations are nothing else but really the boundary conditions on your wave functions, which in turn then constrains momenta of the particle. So if I'm in infinite volume, each individual particle can carry arbitrary momenta. If I'm on the cylinder, you know that if you have a single particle, momenta has to be quantized in units of 1 over volume. The situation becomes more complicated if you have m-body interacting system. Now, the rest is all the same as in infinite volume, meaning you still have dispersion relations and you still have two-body interactions. And as I say, if you're lucky and if these interactions are basically of the delta source type, then essentially we are done fully and you can get exact results just by studying beta equations, exact for any value of L. And this is precisely what is happening, for example, for XXX spin chain. But in field theory, typically we'll have polarization effects as Kostya explained on Monday, and essentially you will have the finite range of interactions and then life becomes far more complicated. So as I said, as we demonstrated now, the system, the significant simplification if you consider system in infinite volumes, but as I will try to argue in this talk, basically volume in string theory is related to the charge carried by the string configuration. And since we, at the end of the day, really want to have spectra of the physical particles carrying finite charges, that means that sooner or later we will have to face the problem of quantizing strings on a cylinder rather than on a plane. And it's not clear a priori how much of this whole idea of beta program will survive. So in this talk, what we really will try to make some baby's first steps in the direction to understand these finite size effects. In particular, what we first want to understand is what is volume in string theory and how it could affect this, as I said, beta string program. And really what we want to understand is, as I told you, there are two ingredients. One is dispersion relation, another is two-body interactions. So what I want to understand, what is the elementary excitation, nature of the elementary excitation, and in particular how dispersion relation gets modified by Sinus' finite size effect. In particular, what we want really to understand is also this unusual dispersion, conjectured dispersion relation for the elementary excitation on the string Borel sheet, which is on one side relativistic. It has this square root, signaling that we are really in field theory, relativistic field theory. But on the other side, it has dependence on the momentum, which is through C sinus, which is more characteristic for the lattice system rather than for continuous field theories. So we want really to see whether we can derive, in a sense, that from the C appearance, for example, of the sinus from the world sheet perspective. Okay. So let's try first to understand, put a little bit on a more firm grounds, what is the volume of string theory? So very roughly speaking, it would be very useful to work in so-called uniform gauge. So what is uniform gauge? Roughly speaking, basically it's a gauge in which you distribute some of the conserved charges in a uniform fashion on the string Borel sheet, which means that the volume of the string Borel sheet, domain of the sigma on the Borel sheet, will be proportional to the charge carried by this string configuration. And this is also something which is sort of inspired by gauge theory side, where you basically have spins which carry charge. So if I look at large the operators which carry a large charge, that means that they have many sides and they have long strings. So now I can just generalizing this that it doesn't have to be spin, but it can be any, we will see, can be various arbitrary charge of the target space which is distributed homogeneously on the string Borel sheet. So more precisely, let us consider the metric, which basically have two directional isometries, one in phi, so metric doesn't depend on phi, doesn't depend on time. And then basically, instead of considering these two directions, t and phi, I can also make linear combinations, x plus, x minus, in this way. So basically, I will introduce this auxiliary parameter a, which will tell me what kind of linear combinations I make. And this will correspond to, let's say, various Lightcon coordinates. So Lightcon here is really abuse of the word, because these x plus and x minus are not directions of the light cone. but it will basically allow us to interpolate between the standard light cone and between the, for example, static gauge. So if you write an action, I will also write action in this form, so the Polyakov form, where we have this Valentinian metric, Rorschach metric, and just note here that range of r, the range of sigma, Rorschach coordinate, is not fixed. It's from minus r and r, and I will fix it in a moment in a particular way by doing gauge fixing. Fix what is the range of sigma. So how do we impose the gauge? As I told you, we have isometries in the target space. That means that we have conserved charges. Translation in time corresponds to the global energy. Translation in phi corresponds to the angular momentum. And I can express these conserved charges on the world sheet basically as these integrals. And these are the momenta conjugated to t and phi coordinates. Or if instead of considering t and phi direction, I can also look at linear combinations, and then I can introduce this x minus and x plus coordinates and look at corresponding basically momenta, light cone momenta, the quotation mark p minus and p plus, which are then linear particular linear combinations of this energy and angular momentum. And then, so these are just charges in the target space. Now, how do I fix the gauge? First of all, I say that x plus coordinate, once again, we went from t phi to x plus x minus. So I say that x plus, which is like time-like direction, is identified with the world sheet time. In principle, I can have non-trivial winding corresponding to non-trivial m here, but in the rest of the talk, I will really focus on the winding, which are zero. So I have basically that x plus is equal to tau, and then if a is equal to 1/2, then basically this is just x plus becomes the standard light cone direction, and I just say the light cone time is equal to tau, world sheet time, and this is the light cone gauge. If a is equal to 0, then x plus is equal to t, and then I have equal t equal tau in target space. Target space t equal to world sheet time, tau, and then I'm back in the temporal gauge. So you see this parameter a allows me to interpolate between the various gauges. And then another thing which I impose the density of this charge, P plus, so basically light cone momentum, it has a density 1 on the world sheet. That means when I integrate it over the string world sheet, I get total momentum P plus. And now I'm fixing my range of sigma. So I'm not taking sigma to go, as usual, from 0 to 2 pi, but I take it to go from minus R to R. And then you see that essentially the range of R, range of sigma, is fixed by the total momentum carried by the configuration, by string configuration. So R is proportional to P plus over square root of lambda. That means that if string carries large momentum P plus, then it has, if you want, a large domain of sigma Rorschach coordinates. So in that sense, you have an infinite volume. However, note that this is sigma, so this is the Rorschach coordinate. It's not a target space proper size of your string. You can still have very small string, almost point-like string, like, for example, the BMM string, for which this quantity is finite, which basically has a target space, looks like point particle, and for which this quantity can be actually large. So this is the Rorschach range of sigma, which is, as I said, large if momenta carried by the particle is large. Okay. So now we want to gauge fix. We want to get rid of all unphysical degrees of freedom and work with the gauge fixed actions and Hamiltonian. So I write my action in the first order form. Basically, I have the Virasoro constraint C1 and C2. And if I write explicitly, spell out what is this constraint C1, introducing these x plus and x minus coordinates and the conjugate momenta, it's given in this form. So I want to get rid of, as I said, to fix completely diffeomorphism invariance. I want to solve these constraints explicitly. And I can do that. So from this equation, I solve for x minus prime, because basically x plus prime is 0. We have chosen that x plus is tau, so this term drops. And then you can solve for this and plug it into your second constraint and then solve second constraint for p minus. So then you get basically the Rorschach Hamiltonian, light cone Hamiltonian, the Hamiltonian density, now expressed only in terms of physical degrees of freedom, transverse fields. And then you can integrate it over the string Rorschach and you get the total Hamiltonian carried by the string configuration. Now note that this Hamiltonian, from the target space perspective, is not an energy which we are interested in string theory, we are usually interested in energy, which is energy in global coordinates, this E here. So that means that we really have to, if we compute quantity H, we still have to solve it for E. Now, this is not trivial because a range of R here actually also involves this parameter E. And as Gleb described this morning, in principle, this will define for you a non-trivial equation for E. So very often what's happening is that it's very nice to work in this light cone gauge, things very simplified, but at the end of the day, you still have to solve this equation in order to extract quantity which you're interested in, namely E. Now, okay, we do this gauge fixing, and finally we are done. We have our action, which now involves only physical transfers, physical degrees of freedom, and we have our Hamiltonian. So now what do we want to do with this guy? Well, if you look at now this section and the symmetries of this section, then this section actually possesses invariance under the rigid translation on the world sheet. If you assume the transverse fields satisfy periodic boundary conditions, that means that there is another charge associated to the translation on the world sheet, which is basically given by this quantity, and this is nothing else but the world sheet momentum. Now, I want to emphasize once again that it's crucial here that the transverse fields are periodic. So you can check that if you, this is considered only the transverse fields are periodic. Now, what we usually do in string theory, we consider closed strings. That means all fields, including X minus. So I went from here to here using just Virasoro constraint that X minus prime is equal to this combination. So usually in string theory, we are dealing with a closed string. That means that this integral, which is a total derivative, actually vanishes because X minus is periodic. That means that in string theory, we are really dealing with the configurations where total world sheet momentum is zero. And this is indeed what people call level meshing condition. And this is indeed something which tells you that even when you gauge fix your action, that all points on the strings are equivalent, right? That you can, that there are no distinct endpoints. So this is very important because basically what are we after now? We want to here to isolate a single magnon, elementary excitation, the want to have this magnon comes basically from the gauge theory. And you see in string theory that configurations, and these magnons are supposed to carry some units of the momentum, world sheet momentum. But you see that closed strings always carry world sheet momentum, which is equal to zero. That's why when we solve beta equations corresponding to quantum string beta, describing the quantum string beta equations, you have to supplement these beta equations with the zero momentum condition, namely the condition that the total momentum carried by all magnons is zero. This is not something that people usually do when they talk about spin chains. However, now what we want to do is something opposite. So we want to isolate magnon on the string side, not on the, on the spin chain side. So we want to focus on one magnon only. So one magnon will carry necessarily world sheet momentum, which is non-zero. But that way, the previous reasoning means that this X minus coordinate has to be, world sheet momentum is proportional to the, basically to delta X minus. That means the delta X minus has to be non-vanishing. That means that essentially, if we decide to solve, to isolate a single magnon, we basically need to solve closed string equations of motion, dropping level matching condition, and that means that we are essentially talking about not closed strings, but rather open strings. Heuristically, if you think about closed string, as I said, always consists of two at least magnons, because you have to have total momentum zero. That means if I want to have one magnon, I have basically to cut and consider an open string. Now, there are several remarks which I want to make here. First of all, it's very important to realize that this is not a conventional open string. Why? Because the only thing which we did to go from the conventional closed string to this kind of open string is to drop the level matching condition. Then we were forced to make delta X minus open. But it still means that all transverse fields, this was the condition that we have a conserved world sheet momenta, all transverse fields are periodic, which is not a property of open string, right, necessarily. Note also that all this was independent on whether momentum which was carried by string was finite or infinite. So this was all valid for any P. Finally, what is also important is that if you look at the density of this world sheet momentum, which I wrote here, you see this quantity here. This quantity here not necessarily vanishes at string endpoints. That means the density of the world sheet momentum is non-vanishing and then at string endpoints. That means that it can basically go out on one side it can go out from the string. But why is it conserved? The reason why it's conserved is because we have this synchronized boundary condition or string endpoint. So how much, if you want strings, momentum flow out on one side, that much string momentum flows into the other side. And that all has to do with the fact that we have periodic boundary conditions on the transverse fields. In other words, in the transverse direction, string is still closed. It doesn't know that it has opened in x minus direction. Finally, note that if we are on the infinite, if you have a string which carries infinite angle, infinite charge, P plus or J, that means that the range of R is infinite. That means that if you want to consider any bump on the top of this infinite system, that means that derivatives at infinity have to vanish. And then, that means that basically transverse field, apart from being periodic, will also satisfy Neumann boundary conditions. And these are the boundary conditions which basically the standard Hofmann-Mattesena Magnon would satisfy. But these are the generic things. So the only thing which we did here is to drop level matching condition. These are all consequences of just dropping the level matching condition. Okay, so now once we have figured out... Yes? Well, this was all bosonic, yes, in the story, but I don't know. Well, I mean, in principle, you would have to go through the similar type of exercise, but I think it can, yeah, one would have to do it to do it here. All fermions, you mean? Okay, I mean, I don't know on the top of my head. I think I would have to. Okay, so anyway, so now let's go back to... So once we have specified our boundary condition, what we want to do is we really want to solve for the string describing a single magnon. So for that, we consider a string on R cross S2, and we have this section. I can parameterize my fields. So I have three fields, X1, X2, X3, parameterizing my sphere. Instead of X1, X2, X3, I can talk about Z and Phi. And, write my action. And then, as I said, we can solve for constraints explicitly, and we get an action describing only transverse physical excitations, namely in direction Z. And then we can make the ansatz for describing this single magnon like this, Z of sigma minus Vt. So if I take this ansatz, plug it into the action, I basically end up with the one-dimensional system which has a conserved charge with respect to the direction sigma, and I can parameterize my charge in this way, it doesn't matter. And anyway, if you solve now for the expression of charge, which will involve Z primes in terms of this conserved charge H, you basically get this first order equation, which you can now integrate. And what you get is basically you get a solution which is parameterized by three parameters. First of all, there is one parameter describing different gauges. As I told you, we have made the gauge fixing with one parameter gauges. And then there are two physical parameters, one basically describing coming from the velocity sitting in my ansatz here, describing basically how the bump on the string will shift, with which velocity it will move. And then there is another one which is related by basically total energy, or if you want angular momentum carried by the configuration. And then equivalently, I can translate these two into Z min and Z max. Z is basically cosinus theta. So this will tell me in which range of cosinus theta solution will be living. And if you look at, for example, solution, you integrate this equation numerically for various values of J, or if you want various values of omega, keeping the V fixed, then you see that as you increase J, meaning decrease omega, that string becomes more and more flat, and range of sigma grows. So eventually, if omega actually goes to 1, this becomes completely flat, so sigma goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. And then you can also integrate to see what is basically x minus. And if you're interested in the shape of this string in a target space, of course, what you need to do is eliminate sigma, and then you get essentially what is z as a function of x minus. And then you see again that as you increase angular momentum, strings basically approaches equator here, and the height of the string is governed by the velocity of the excitation, magnon excitation. So what we are interested in, this configuration, this string configuration is supposed to describe single magnon. And what we are interested in is really to recover dispersion relation, because this is dispersion relation which should be coming also from the, which should be one of the basic building blocks for our quantum string beta ansatz. So what we need to do is we need to compute E of J as a function of Rolle-Schmidt momentum. And for that, we can compute what is E, and J, E minus J is a function of this Z min and Z max. But Z min and Z max can be expressed in terms of basically momentum carried by the string configuration and Wolschmidt momentum via these two relations. For that, actually, you don't even need to integrate to know explicitly the solution as a function of sigma. You can change coordinates. So, for example, here, instead of integral over d sigma, I can just do the trick and go to dz integration. Anyway, at the end of the day, once the dust settles, you get expression, which is dispersion relation, which tells you what is the energy of the magnon as a function of the Wolschmidt momentum carried by this magnon. And in principle, this configuration is expression is complicated. But let me also then, and if you're interested in the shape of this guy, to describe this guy, in principle, it's complicated in arbitrary, to do it in arbitrary gauge. But we can look, for example, how this configuration looks in n equals 0 gauge. In this gauge, this is basically static gauge because x plus is equal to t. In that case, n equal to tau. And the Wolschmidt momentum in this case, which is just delta x minus, is equal to delta phi. The reason why this t drops out is because time is periodic. And generically, time will not be periodic on the string Wolschmidt. So once again, this is how our magnon for finite J looks like. It comes from, it's not ending on the equator, but a little bit above the equator. And how much above the equator is governed by what is the angular momentum carried by this string. If it's infinite, then it goes all the way down to equator. If it's finite, it goes up to 1 over omega. Omega goes to infinity is J goes to infinity. And the height of this bump is basically related to the velocity of the bump propagating on the string Wolschmidt. And this is a picture at one moment of time. And then if you look at this configuration after some another moment of time, then you see that actually the shape is not fixed, but it actually changes in time. And actually you can even make the plot, time-dependent plot. So this is how actually this magnon looks as the time propagates. So what you see is that the momentum flows from one side to another. So it's not really a giant magnon. It's more like a giant worm. And then what you see is that, so this is if omega is finite and small. And then if we increase J, then you see that it goes deeper, closer to the equator, and it goes slower. And if J becomes infinite, then you recover your rigid Hoffman-Maldacena string magnon, which basically takes infinite amount of time for this guy to go from one side to another. And that's related to the fact that momentum doesn't flow anymore from the string endpoints. So we have, in principle, dispersion relation for one magnon, which is valid for any size of your string chain, so which is in any finite volume. However, that is a complicated expression, and what we want to do is first we want to see what is this expression if J is infinite. Can we actually recover this funny dispersion relation, which was postulated in a string beta ansatz? And then what you see is that if J goes to infinity, as I told you, this string becomes rigid, there is no wiggling. And you can actually, this dispersion relation simplifies tremendously and actually just becomes this simple sinus. And then if you go and compare that to the expression with a postulated full dispersion relation, you see that essentially this is nothing else but large lambda limit and finite p limit of this dispersion relation. So indeed, you start seeing this sinus. And why do you see sinus? You see sinus because you have motion on the sphere, because your momentum is related to the separation between the string endpoints, which cannot be arbitrarily large, but it's bounded by the size of your sphere. Now, this was if J would be infinite. But if J is finite, but very large, so if you want to go a little bit better than the infinite J beta, that's what dispersion relation we would need, or better to say, we would have to reproduce. It's complicated. It's this mess. However, what you have to know, you should notice here, first of all, that there is this important sinus p Wolschmidt over 2 part, and then you get a series in e to the minus r exponential in higher and higher powers, where r is this expression here, and each power of e to the minus r is multiplied with polynomial in r, where degree of the polynomial is related to, you see here, r squared and e to the minus 2r, so it cannot be higher. So in principle, you get corrections, exponential corrections to the dispersion relation. And what you should notice, one very important thing, is that you see the dispersion relation depends explicitly on the gauge parameter. So this is something which is maybe first looks very strange, but on the other side, it's not strange because we don't have we have opened the string. We don't have any more diffeomorphism invariant state. So we have decided to cut the string, and how we decide to cut the string and to isolate a single magnon will be reflected in our dispersion relation. So that's one important thing. Another thing is that if you look at A goes to infinity limit, sorry, J goes to infinity limit, so this Hofmann-Valdesena limit, so if you're on the line, then you see that actually all dependence on this dispersion relation disappears. So all magnon, single magnon configuration look the same in all various gauges. Now, what is funny about this relation that if you look at finite J and you look at configuration which are E minus where A is different from zero, then you see that Wolfschmidt, the dispersion relation is actually not periodic in Wolfschmidt momentum. You see, it's not only that it enters through sinus, cosinus, and so on, but there is a linear part. And that's, okay, maybe that's the fact of life, but maybe not. I mean, the reason why we would want to have, of course, dispersion relation to be periodic in momentum is because we have somehow this idea that there is some kind of lattice behind it and the momentum should just live in my first Brillouin zone. Okay, but if that's the case, then it seems to be that A equals zero gauges may be preferred, in some sense. So it's not bad to keep just this in mind once we start attacking the finite J systems. And finally, if you look at the structure of these exponential corrections, and if you recall that the natural definition of the volume is actually J over square root of lambda, then you see that the structure of this exponent is something like a volume over delta M, where delta M is naturally then associated to the size of the magnum. And then you see that the size of the magnum grows as momentum grows. So this giant magnum is giant because it doesn't have a parametrically vanishing momentum. And this is actually something which, if you look at, for example, Hubbard, the same type of exponential corrections seems to pop up there. And just one other remark is all this we have derived in a case when P was of the order 1, so when we didn't have asymptotically vanishing, parametrically vanishing momenta. However, if you take this formula and just close your eyes and say, okay, let's assume that this is valid for any P, then you see that actually in the Biemann limit, despite the fact that volume is finite, recall in Biemann limit J is infinite, but in square root of lambda is infinite, so volume is infinite, you don't have a finite size effect because simply P, the size of the magnon, is basically zero. So that's these are basically, in a sense, predictions of this computation. One is dispersion relation, another one is what is the size of the magnum. Now, what is important to cross-check if you want to follow this construction is that we have cut the string and we have isolated a single magnum. But now we should be able, what is a magnum? It should be a basic building block for our closed string configurations. So in principle, I should be able to put several magnums and build my closed string. Now in principle, if I have a finite volume, that's non-trivial because I cannot just add them to it on top of each other. I mean, adding two solitons in finite volume to two Sine-Gordon solitons in a finite volume will distort other solitons, so that's going to be complicated. However, it seems that in this case, actually, there is a configuration where you can sort of add trivially, if you want to propose trivially, this magnon. So this was my magnon. This is a sphere as U from above, from the North Pole. I have just flattened it. So you see, this is, for example, four magnon configuration and moment equals zero. And what happens is they all hop, right? We saw them hopping. And after one period, they shift like this. This is my non-rigid string. But then it should be possible to build also a closed string, which is when I fill out this whole circle. And then what you see is so there should be this kind of star configuration, which is now a legitimate state, closed string state, proper solution of the closed string equations of motion. And moreover, this configuration should be non-rigid, because why was this guy rigid? Because I have cut it by hand, and I have seen that there is momentum flowing on the string roll sheet. But here I cannot distinguish that there is this blue and green. This is just an artifact of my cutting. And indeed, you can construct. There is a proper closed string configuration which looks like this, and which doesn't carry, which is really rigid. And proper interpretation of this configuration, it really consists of six finite J magnons. Okay. So that's in a sense cross-check, if you want, of our Van Magnum configuration construction. Now, what is another nice thing which we can now, once we have this constructed, our single Magnum, which we can examine it a little bit and try to learn as much as we can from it. One thing is to ask the question, what are the symmetries preserved by this Magnum? So a key step in our construction was that we were dropping the level matching condition because that allowed us to isolate a single Magnum. So now you can ask what's happening with the symmetry algebra if you drop the level matching condition. So for that, I can first consider the trivial, in a sense, simple example of flat space in Lightcone gauge. And I can compute or consider these generators, which have one leg in the direction which basically is used to fix the Lightcone gauge. And then you can see that if you look at time derivative of this charge, the Lightcone momentum, this charge, this dynamical charge, then basically what you see is that expression is given like this. I can use equations of motion and derive this as a surface integral. And then you see that essentially this charge is not going to be conserved if x minus is not a periodic function. So in other words, this is conserved only if I have either a closed string or I have a proper open string Neumann boundary condition. That means that essentially, in finite J case, where neither this vanishes nor this vanishes, this charge is not going to be conserved. So that means that finite J Magnum actually will not preserve the full target space algebra, but will break part of the generators. It will break these dynamical generators. Note that in J goes to infinity limit, if you consider Magnums on an infinite line, then all generators are conserved, and that's basically due to the fact that we have Neumann boundary conditions for this transverse field. So this is an important consequence of this analysis, because it seems that life is much tougher if you consider finite J, if you consider the finite J string configurations. So now instead of having basically string in a Lightcone gauge, I can consider them for, again, just bosons, but on a sphere, and I can repeat the same exercise. And then what you see is that this J12 angular momentum, which describes the motion, rigid motion of string on the equator, is conserved, while the other two charges basically are not conserved, again, due to the basically non-periodicity of x minus. So it means if you take, for example, our giant Magnum, finite J giant Magnum, it will not have all charges conserved. It will have only basically J angular momentum conserved. Now, this is all, this ugly stuff all happens because we are once again in the finite J systems. If you look at on the other side at the infinite J systems, then, as I argued, all charges are conserved, but moreover, not just that, even if you drop the level matching condition, but moreover, not just that all charges are conserved, but if you actually compute for the full model the algebra, actually the algebra for the subalgebra of the full PSU 2.2/4 algebra, you see that this algebra gets actually enhanced. There is a central extension of this algebra, and this is precisely what Niklas also was arguing, that it's necessary if you want to do the construction on the gauge theory side. So here you see that this comes out as a consequence. The central extension of the algebra comes out as a consequence of dropping the level matching conditions, but comes out from the computation. It's not a postulate. Now, we can also, so we were playing now with different light cone gauges. We can also consider our Magnum in, for example, in a conformal gauge. So I choose my metric, value invariant part of the metric to be basically flat, and I supplement it with the condition T equal tau. This is closer to original derivation for the infinite J Magnum of Hoffman-Modersohn. And now, basically motivated by the light cone analysis, we require that Z transverse field is periodic, and the delta 5 here is constant. And then you can solve your equations of motion imposing these boundary conditions. But once again, these boundary conditions in the conformal gauge are something which you impose by hand. So maybe you have very good intuition why you should impose them. While in the Lightcone gauge, once again, they come out as a necessary consequence, as a consequence of just dropping the level matching condition. So now we can make the answers to describe this Van Magnum configuration. Basically, it's the similar type of the ansatz as we had before. And actually, in this case, equations turn out to be simpler, and you can integrate them basically analytically. And unlike in the previous case, this actually soliton on the world sheet is smooth. Previously, we had this peak, we had this soliton which had a derivative which was going to infinity. Now all derivatives are finite for this one. But again, if you take now this this magnon in the A equals zero gauge, and you look at its target space picture, it agrees with the light cone A equals zero magnon. So once again, we had in a previous story when we considered various light cone gauges, we have discovered actually one family of magnon configurations which were not equivalent. But we see somehow that A equals zero gauge seems to be preferred because it gives us the same magnon as conformal gauge. And recall also another thing, that dispersion relation is periodic in the A equals zero gauge. So it seems somehow to hinge that this may be a better gauge than the other gauges. Okay. So let me just briefly conclude by saying that essentially this giant magnon configuration, are in a sense a good laboratory for studying the properties of our elementary excitations in isolation. And up to now, we really didn't have a proof that the proper dispersion relation should contain on a string theory sign this sign. And now we see that actually sign is something which can be, in a sense, derived from string theory. And it really comes from the discompactness of the, in a sense, it's not a UV effect on the world sheet, but it's rather infrared effect in a target space. It comes from the compactness of the sphere. And what you see is that basically using just string theory, we can derive and make a prediction for the dispersion relation of the elementary excitation in a finite volume. So whatever system one day we propose for the quantum string, it should better give us this dispersion relation. And as I said, the nice thing is that this seems to agree, at least qualitatively, with the prediction coming from the Humbert model. However, the very ugly, in a sense, thing, unpleasant surprise in all this game was that algebra seems to be broken if you talk about finite system, and that somehow will have to be reflected in the spectrum for the finite J. So the question is how much of this beta program will survive in finite J. That, of course, remains to be seen. In particular, as I said, what is the prediction, what is the implication of this algebra? And finally, what is still, I think, not understood in all this game is what is the meaning of the various gauge choices which we can have. In other words, whether the all gauge choices, because in a sense what we are doing by dropping the level matching condition, we are going off shell, we are not considering any more physical strings, but we are going one level below. And it's not clear once you start dropping, going off shell, you can do it in many different ways. So it's not clear that all gauges will necessarily lead to the same prediction. And maybe you can even go one level below, namely with something which Bologi will describe now, and not just dismiss the level matching, but dismiss Virasoro, and actually try to look at also longitudinal excitation. And then, of course, you probably have even more freedom. So this is something which one has to, I guess, understand. You're not guaranteed that all these systems, once you start dropping symmetries which you have in the system, will lead to the same set of underlying integrable models. Thanks.
So are there any questions?
The fact that you can still superimpose magnons to make a physical state at finite J is quite surprising. Is that a general result of your configurations,
or it only works for special ones? It works for very, very special configuration. Actually, it's in a sense a surprise.
Yes,
because you would
mainly
expect if you have, two solitons, two Sine-Gorin solitons on a cylinder, they're for sure not going to be just simple superposition of single solitons. And here, it's in a sense a miracle. I mean, it seems to be working out. I don't have a deep understanding of. But the point, note here that there is a condition that all these guys, when they start hopping, they have to move with the same velocities. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, the relative motion is always preserved. It's really very rigid. They don't scatter against each other.
So it's a special point in whatever the two...
two magnon configuration. You can never read of the S matrix for two magnons in a finite volume.
And is it possible to actually find the exact analogs of two magnon solutions in the more general case? I mean,
Well, we didn't really try hard, but presumably it is. By whom? No, no, but his this is this Riemann configuration, this star. But this is a configuration which is rigid. So what this magnon do is hop. No, the closed. The non-rigid one, but the Rank doesn't have a non-rigid configuration.
Okay. I thought he was asking about the rigid one.
The rigid one is this one, which I have drawn the picture, and that's nice, but it's very non-generic, mm-hmm. in a sense that these guys do not scatter of each other. They just rigidly propagate.
Further questions? Okay, I have one. In the algebra, you find a central extension even for string theory. In gauge theory, you actually see this central extension, even in the supersymmetry algebra, as a gauge transformation coming out of commutator of supercharges. And mm-hmm. I was wondering, do you see this level matching condition appear also, say, in the classical string theory, or is this something well known?
You can see it in a classical, and you can see it in the near BMN quantum.
Okay.
And it's full SUSY stuff we are talking about mm-hmm. here, not the bosonic one. But it's crucial that J is infinite.
Okay.
If J is finite, it seems that you are significantly screwed up.
Okay. Diego has one more question.
Thanks. So, for the infinite J limit, P is conserved and everything works out nicely because P is really topological charge. For example, when you go to a light cone description of this action, you can see that even when you pick some gauge where the action is not symmetric and the translations in the world sheet, you still have this conserved current because P is now topological, it's just winding. So in your case, this is not true anymore.
It's another charge.
Well, the problem is that it's like you're seeing, it's depending on the gauge. I mean, you can try solving the same action in a different gauge. Let's say you can pick the angle theta to be the independent variable, say in the sphere.
To be what?
To be the independent variable. Just take phi and time as parametrizing, let's say the world sheet, right. and then you'll see that the theory is not has no translation symmetry. So
I don't think that it has to do anything. So if you do the gauge fixing, however you do the gauge fixing, whatever coordinates you choose, you will end up with the, if you look at gauge fixed Hamiltonian, you will have this symmetry, sigma goes to sigma plus a. And you can show that this charge is really conserved if you impose this periodic boundary.
That's not true in any gauge.
Well, in these gauges which we have considered, which is as far as I don't know what other gauge you have in mind. So we consider one family of light cone gauges, and we consider the conformal gauge, and it's actually, as I said, the family. In these cases, all these cases, it's true.
My point that you're getting is a dependence, because the nether current is changing with the gauge. And
sure, nether charge changes, that's clear. And you know, mean in topological case, it wouldn't, sure.
My point is that the case is topological. You don't have another charge. You don't even need another symmetry to do that, because you can do that in any gauge, even in gauges where there's no symmetry.
But in principle, this charge is also, even in J goes to infinity limits, it's also another charge. I mean, you can see it as another charge. The only difference is that your fields are also, your string in transverse direction is also closed. Periodic, it has periodic boundary condition, but on the top of that, derivatives are also vanishing. That's the only difference which you have when you go to on the line. And the reason why you require that this derivative vanishes is just because you want your energy density when you integrate it over the world sheet to be fine, and that you don't have a support, pick up the support at infinity. But there is all this is very generic, so it's very for J small.
And I'm just surprised that.
I don't think it's so surprising that you have a dependence on the world sheet momentum, because you are going off shell, you are cutting your string, you are deciding by hand that one part of the string is different than the other. Mm-hmm. So as I tried to illustrate this with these different colors on this star, once you have a closed string, there is no colors which you can see, but once you cut the string, part of the string, then you can say that there are endpoints which distinguish one part of the string from the other, but this cutting is something which you do by hand. and which introduces dependence on the gauge. So you break the symmetry which is there for the full system.
Okay, so we have lots of time after after this, after the next talk. So let's thank Maria again.